Hi, this is Allison Sheridan of the NoSillaCast podcast, hosted at podfeet.com, a technology geek podcast with an ever-so-slight Macintosh bias. Today is Sunday, August 28th, 2011, and this is show number 327. Well, I don't know about you guys, but I love the Katie Hijack show. I like the reviews, I like the reviews you guys sent in, and I really enjoyed chit-chat across the pond with Bart, even if there was a little bit of Allison teasing in there. I think one of the things I really like about having someone else do the show is hearing them say how hard it is to do all the plate spinning that I do. It was absolutely grand to have the week off, I have to tell you. As much as I love doing the show, it was so relaxing not to have it in the back of my mind when I was playing, you know, that, oh, you really should be writing, you really should be researching this sort of thing. I especially noticed it on the weekend when we were home and at the weekend of the show, and I simply goofed around all weekend. Kyle said, hey, let's go do this. And I'd go, yeah, okay, because I could. It was glorious. Thank you very much, Katie, and it was a fun show. On this Thursday afternoon, my friend Nancy got a desperate call from her brother. He tried to boot up his Mac, but that was not happening. Now, I want you to close your eyes, unless you're driving, of course, keep your eyes open, and just put yourself in Doug's place. Imagine that sick feeling in your gut, that realization that your wife is never going to forgive you because all of the family photos and videos might be gone. Now, as if this nightmare wasn't bad enough, imagine that you just bought a backup drive. You just got backup religion. You just bought an external hard drive, but you hadn't quite gotten around to running a backup yet. That's what Doug went through Thursday night. So why am I telling you this horror story? So that you get off your lazy butt and start backing up. That's why. You could be in Doug's shoes. You know, in the old days, there were reasons to put off backing up. It was hard. It was cumbersome. It was nerve-wracking. You had no idea whether it even worked because the old backup program stored the data in some kind of idiotic proprietary format where you couldn't even tell if it was working or not. Nowadays, it's easy. It's trivially easy. Buy a drive that's 2 to 3 times the size of the drive you need to back up and plug it in. Seriously, that's all you have to do. Because when you plug it in, your Mac is going to say, hey, you want to use this as a backup drive through Time Machine? Okay, I guess there's one more step. You have to click yes. That's it. Now, what possible excuse could you have not to do this? What, you don't really care about your photos? You don't care about your videos? You don't care about files of any sort? Really? Yeah, I thought so. You do care. So buy a darn backup drive, spend $50 to $100, and plug it in. P.S. Doug did get really, really lucky. Apple was able to pull his hard drive, get the data back, and put in a new drive for him. But you won't be that lucky. Okay, end lecture. So a rather big tech news story hit while I was gone. HP dumping their tablet, their phones, potentially the entire PC business. You know, I don't watch TV very often, or TV news very often, but while we were in Mammoth, Steve and I had it on, and I about fell over. I was so shocked at the news. Just this May, Steve and I were at All Things D, where we heard Leo Apotheker talk about WebOS as the future of the company. He said that WebOS would be their tablet OS, their phone OS, their computer OS, and it would be in every printer over $100, unless he changes his mind, decides to dump the phones and the tablets. Now, I remember something else odd that he said. He explained that he has sheltered the WebOS team from the rest of the company, and that he doesn't let them work with other parts of the company. I wonder why he did that after all. Maybe so they couldn't see what's coming when he discontinued everything they were working on? Well, except for printers, of course. That's still exciting. But wait, they also said they were exploring strategic opportunities around their personal devices division. That's French for was selling off the PC business. Now, you may be thinking, HP is the biggest manufacturer of PCs in the world. How could they just walk away from that? Now, that was my first reaction, too, but the more I read about the PC business, the more I think Apotheker might actually be making a brilliant move, crazy like a fox, as they say. According to the Wall Street Journal, the PC business at HP brought in $9.59 billion in revenue. That's about a third of the total revenue of the company. But it only had an operating margin, that's profit, of 5.4% in 2010. Now, the entire company combined, including that boat anchor business, has an operating margin of 11.7%. That's more than twice what the PC business is doing. So that business really is a boat anchor, and it's pulling the ship down as even the revenue is declining year over year. Now, if all Apotheker did was dump a third of the business, that might be kind of dopey. But at the same time, he was coming out with this huge announcement. They also bought the UK firm Autonomy. It's the second largest software company in all of Europe, second only to SAP in Germany, which is a huge company. So this company, Autonomy, is much higher up in the food chain. They work to help companies analyze business data. I got to tell you, that's a cash cow right there. This is a very bold move for Apotheker, and it reflects one more thing that he said at All Things D. He said, you'll see a completely different HP in a couple of years. I guess he was telling the truth about that. Now, it does appear that prospective buyers for the HP businesses are overseas, which means there may only be two PC companies left in the United States, Dell and Apple. In any case, these sure will be interesting times. Oh, one last note. I'm kind of excited. I take a lot of pictures at a lot of events, specifically at All Things D, and I got a kind of funny shot of Leo Apotheker at the conference, and I put it up on Flickr under Creative Commons with my other photos, and SAI's Business Insider actually used my photo and, of course, gave me photo credit. So I'll put a link to that article and the picture in the show notes. You know, I get so many lovely emails from you guys telling me how much fun the show is and how much you enjoy the time we have together. I just love this. It means so much to me, and it's what actually gives me the rush to keep these things going after all these years. Jim Sewell wrote a lovely letter to me just this week, and it's just, it means the world to me to hear from you guys. There's something else you could do for the show, though, if you have the time. I'd love it if you'd go out to iTunes and make a comment about the show. For instance, here's a recent one from Leon Sargent. He wrote, Allison, your ever-so-slight Macintosh bias makes for a great podcast as it covers lots of topics and platforms, and your wit and straightforward, no-holds approach to what you do is fun and refreshing for every week. I have an idea of what I'm going to get for topic coverage, but never in what way you're going to critique it. Thanks for great listening. Now that's what I call a good review. Now remember, though, you don't have to say nice things. Say what you really think. If you've got constructive criticism, go ahead and put it in there. Listen to this one from Sandro Cuccia to see what I mean. Although I find the host a bit on the obnoxious side, even though she's an engineer, she often struggles with simple concepts, and she revels in her refusal to read technical documentation. The content of this podcast is always top-notch. I have purchased and enjoyed several products over the years based on the host's recommendations. Mostly I tune in to wait for a regular to most episodes, Bart Bouchat's of Ireland. This fellow IT professional keeps me informed of many things technical and puts up with the host's annoying ways. He is an accomplished photographer as well. And then Sandra went on and gave the show 5 stars. Well, everyone's entitled to their opinion, right? Now, you may not realize this, but having comments, and lots of them, is what pushes a podcast to the top of the charts, which in turn gets more listeners to the show. They don't even have to be good comments, like that one that I just read. Anyway, thanks for your help on this. I sure would appreciate it if you take a minute and run over there and give the show a little comment. Now let's listen in on a review from Dorothy, also known as Mac Lurker, in the chat room and on Twitter.
Hello, Allison and Oscilla Castaways. This is Dorothy, otherwise known as Mac Lurker. I thought I'd provide some more information on my Wi-Fi at 28,000 feet experience. First, the problem to be solved. How to join the Oscillacast Live while jetting across the country. Last week, I tried to explain to Allison why I would not be there for the live chat on Friday, August 12th. She refused to accept my excuse that being at 28,000 feet would preclude my participating. In the middle of all this debate, Steve jumped in and suggested Wi-Fi in the air. I had never heard of this, but a bit of research about my flight revealed that Wi-Fi was available. I borrowed my husband's MacBook Pro, loaded some software, ran a quick test Thursday night. Thank you, Allison and DSE Chipman, for helping me check that out. All was ready. First, some background information. U.S. Air provides Wi-Fi in the air via GoGo in-air online at gogoair.com. The cost is $12.95 for 24 hours of access. You can log in and out as often as you want during your flight. Or it's $39.95 for a month of unlimited access with auto-renewal for all of you frequent flyers. You can buy before you fly via their website. Currently, the 24-hour access is 25% off through Labor Day. I opted for the 24-hour access. About 30 minutes before the live broadcast, I turned on my MacBook Pro and used the system preferences to locate the GoGo Wi-Fi network on the airplane. Once I connected and started up Firefox, I was connected to the GoGo website, which described the cost and payment options. I provided payment, set up a login with username and password. I then proceeded to the NosillaCast live website and started up Colloquy for the chat. I have to say that overall, the experience was somewhat underwhelming. The Colloquy chat worked okay, but was a bit bursty. In fact, the chat on the NosillaCast live website updated before the Colloquy window did. However, the audio was a bit more problematical. I decided to do audio only, not trusting the video to work under the circumstances. That was the right decision, as you will see. First, I tried the audio-only stream link. That worked great for about 5 minutes. Then I couldn't get it to bring in any more audio. All I got was the podcast intro over and over. Plus, it kept turning itself off. So I switched to listen in iTunes. That worked somewhat better, except that iTunes kept stopping to rebuffer and then would time out. I'd be listening to Allison's dulcet tones when iTunes would decide that audio feed was done and jump abruptly to the next item in the iTunes playlist. Never Been Any Reason by Head East, if you're wondering. I would select the NosillaCast again, catch up to Allison, having now missed several seconds, listen some more, only to have it time out again. After about 10-15 minutes of this, and having completely lost track of what Allison was talking about, I gave up on the audio altogether. However, I hung in there with the chat for most of the broadcast until the laptop battery started running low. Not having the audio or the video meant I was missing a lot in any case. These problems were not unexpected given the nature of the connection, but it was annoying enough. Maybe there is a better way to configure things that I simply did not have time to find out. I've talked with other people who have used this service, and they have reported similar limitations. In summary, having Wi-Fi in the air is a neat idea as long as your expectations aren't too high. It's good for checking email, chatting or tweeting, and checking out websites. It's not so good for streaming audio or downloading large files. Hope this is helpful. Thanks.
Well, Dorothy, I gotta say, I think you win a prize for the most dedication to the live show. I'm glad to see badgering by Steve will get you to go to such lengths. Remember, I wasn't the one that said you had to do it. I did endorse the activity, though. That was really fun. But that's what we like to see in a good NosillaCast way. Now, are you that smarmy kid from elementary school who won the spelling bee every year? Or are you a typical geek who found learning to spell and all that a big drag when there was math and science to be learned? If all the other reasons I've told you that you need Text Expander haven't hit a chord yet, I'm betting the lack of a spelling gene might just do the trick. Text Expander comes with 112 autocorrect words built into the software. Not enough for you? Click the little plus sign at the bottom left and you can add the Tidbits autocorrect set, which gets you another 2,479 commonly misspelled words. Now, you'd really have to go out of your way to misspell a word with that many autocorrects waiting for you. This is a great way to keep your writing professional without having to actually waste any gray matter on such a trivial matter such as spelling. I downloaded the Tidbits autocorrect set, and I've really been enjoying how incredibly lazy I can be on that whole typo issue. I don't even bother to pay attention because it's just getting fixed all the time. However, I did run into one little problem. I tried to go to the Wall Street Journal website, which you can get to by simply going to WSJ.com instead of typing out WallStreetJournal.com. Unfortunately, some people evidently misspell the word was by accidentally missing the A and just typing WS. So every time I tried to type WSJ, it would autocorrect to was before I could get the J in there. When you think about it, how many people type WSJ versus mess up the spelling of the word was? So anyway, I was trying to figure out how to deal with this and rather than read the instructions, no matter what Sandro says, I'm still not going to read the instructions, I wrote to Jean McDonald of Smile. Jean is amazing. She is so helpful. Anyway, you're going to love what Jean did in response. She launched Clarify from BlueMango.com to make a quick instruction for me on how to change my Tidbits dictionary. How's that for killing two ad birds with one stone? Jean launched the public beta of Clarify from BlueMangoLearning.com/Clarify, walked through how to modify my snippets to solve my problem, and she took quick screenshots along the way, threw in just a few annotations to point with arrows where I should pay attention. She put ovals around some important things to note, and even typed some text on images like, delete me and edit me. She put a few words of explanation before each screenshot and then clicked the share button. That posted a quick explanation to the Clarify It website and gave her a URL to easily send to me. I put her Clarify explanation in the show notes so you could see how simple it is. In those just very, very few minutes, she was able to quickly and easily show me exactly what I needed to do instead of having me go back and forth with her 12 times because she only gave me text. She was able to clarify by making the Clarify tutorial. If you help people, and I'm betting all of you do, you really should give the Clarify public beta a shot like Jean did. Make yourself happy. Now let's get back to Smile again. I haven't even given you my stats lately. With Text Expander, I have expanded 7,300 snippets for just a total of just under 200,000 characters saved since January. Now think of that efficiency. At 60 words per minute, that's almost 11 hours of my time saved. Now I'm probably exaggerating that I type 60 words a minute, so it would be even more of my time saved. Do you have 11 hours to waste? I sure don't. Just think of this. You can, here's an idea. Why don't you think about how much money you make an hour, divide that into the measly $35 a Text Expander costs from the Mac App Store. How many hours would you have to save before it would be worth it to you? Not very many, I'm guessing. I put a link to the Mac App Store in the show notes, so when you go ahead and buy it for all of your Macs for only $35, be sure to use that link to help out the show. Jens Rober is back with another review. Now, I've done reviews of quite a few MiFis recently. Those are the mobile wireless hotspots. But he's actually solving a different problem that makes his choices different than mine. Let's have a listen.
Hello, Alison. This is Jens from Frankfurt talking about my travel setup when traveling abroad with iPhone and iPad. You may imagine that when Europeans travel, they easily hit a country's border and so run into high roaming charges. In order to prevent me from such hazards, I have decided to disable the data roaming on the iPhone. But how can I get mails, tweets, text, etc.? Well, what I did is buying a so-called MiFi, which is nothing but a wireless hotspot on a 3G basis that is not linked to any ISP by a SIM or netlock. I choose the Huawei E5 that is now only 100 euro and decided to buy local mobile data prepaid plans when traveling abroad. In Australia, for instance, you can get a 1 gigabyte download volume for just $15 Australian without any bureaucratical issues through Virgin Mobile, for instance. Once the MiFi is started up, it creates a Wi-Fi hotspot of approximately 5 meters diameter, which is some 16 feet, that you can log into with up to 5 devices at a time. The APM is configurable from the iPhone or the iPad and the iPod Touch as well through a browser interface. This is essential because after you plugged in the local SIM, you need to set up the APN according to the specification the internet provider gave you. I highly recommend to disable the PIN protection of the SIM module as well because it is very inconvenient for an iDevice and the risk is very much limited due to the pre-charged amount of money only. You can set up your own SSID and password as well. The device itself has a battery life of approximately 4 hours. Since this is not enough for a whole day, it is very important that it is chargeable through USB. The Huawei E5 charges at 1000 mAh like the iPhone, so you can use an external battery pack like the Just Mobile Pro Portable Battery Pack, which is 39 euros through Amazon. This battery pack is carrying some 4000 mAh, I think it's 4400 exactly, which is approximately 4 times the capacity of the MiFi battery itself, and so worth some 20 hours of internet access in total. This should be fairly enough. The connection of these two devices is made via mini USB to USB cable that can also be used to charge both MiFi and battery pack by using a standard USB wall charger. Since I usually walk around with a backpack or shoulder bag on vacation, there's no problem to become a mobile walking hotspot, since the weight of the total setup is only 0.5 pound. The mobile battery pack can also be used for charging the iDevices except iPad, and so extend the battery life of the iPhone, while no car-based navigation such as hiking, cycling, and geocaching. Last but not least, the setup is far better than data roaming, since you can also download data files bigger than your iPhone ISP allows, since the iPhone reacts like being in a local Wi-Fi network. So you can also listen to the Nosilacast podcast while being abroad. I might be traveling to the US in November, so Allison, maybe you can tell me which provider I should choose for the US.
Well, thanks, Jans. This is one of those items that the Nosilacastaways can definitely help us out with. I know Pat Mon has done this very same thing in the United States, and I'm sure other Nosilacastaways know the best carriers. My problem is that I've been in the world of buying a device that's been locked for all these years. I like the idea of being able to do a prepaid plan instead when in a foreign country. Now, I know that Verizon has the best coverage in the United States on average, but that's one of those your mileage may vary things. Some places you can't get any Verizon, you only get AT&T, or vice versa, you don't know. So looking at the coverage maps is a great idea before you choose. I also had trouble remembering which of the ISPs use SIM cards. I thought that one of the big ones does and one doesn't, and I was thinking it was AT&T and T-Mobile that use SIM cards and Verizon doesn't. Maybe I have it backwards. Like I said, I hope one or more of the Nosilla Castaways sends in an audio answer to your question instead of relying on my limited knowledge. I did ask Rod Simmons of the Simple Mobile Review podcast, and he said both AT&T and T-Mobile do use SIM cards. AT&T has the plan, does have a plan, but you have to go to a store and buy the MiFi card, the MiFi SIM card from them. He said he didn't get the difference in the SIMs, but that's what they told him. They have a Data Connect Pass at 500 megabytes for $50. That sounds kind of expensive, doesn't it? He said T-Mobile does not have a prepaid data plan. He said Cricket does not offer a plan, but there's several other small players like Simple Mobile, but he said he hasn't checked with everyone. So anyway, if the Nosilla Castaways can provide any advice on that, Pat, who did you use when you're in the United States? That would be really, really helpful if you guys could send in some ideas. So that would be great, and we'll help Jans out. Thank you very much for the review. That was excellent. Well, it's that time of the week again. It's time for Chit Chat Across the Pond. And this week, I am extremely excited to invite to the show for the first time Rod Simmons from the Simple Mobile Review podcast. How are you doing today, Rod?
I'm doing excellent. How are you?
Well, I am excited to have you here because you've just kind of shown up all of a sudden on the show. You've done two or three reviews so far, and you've cost me a fair amount of money with your reviews. I think I've bought everything you've described so far. I have my eye on that Bluetooth headset too. So you're costing me money.
I'm sitting here actually looking at the Bluetooth headset. I was sitting there struggling to think of what could I do for a review for you that is going to be like a free item, because I definitely know as I listen to various shows, I always wind up finding myself spending hundreds or thousands of dollars throughout the course of a year buying all the little gadgets and tricks.
Yeah, you got to throw us a bone here. You know, the headset you talked about was a Logitech. Is that right?
Yeah, it's the Plantronics Voyager Pro Plus.
That's right.
That is I'm looking at it now, so that's how I know that is my go-to headset these days.
You know, I don't actually need a headset, but I've got a friend that I have to work with that on the phone, it's comical how little we can understand what he says, but he works for this cheap company who won't buy him a real headset. And I mean, you literally don't know what the guy says. We'll say, okay, again in English, Steve. And I'm thinking of buying that with my own money just so that I can understand what the guy's saying.
It's definitely, I mean, for me, it's been a valuable purchase. And I also use it because of having A2DP for Bluetooth streaming. I'll use it and just turn on music during the day, or I'll turn on a podcast and listen to that. Mind you, you're only listening in one ear, but the nice thing about it is that you're not disrupting anybody else and they don't really know. And then just like anything else, when a call comes in, it fades out and you fade into the call.
That's way cool. Well, we shouldn't get back off onto that too far, but I wanted to ask you to explain to people the Simple Mobile Review podcast itself, because I've listened to a couple of shows, really, really enjoyed it, but it's not your normal show. It's got some twist to it. Why don't you tell people about the show?
Yeah, so I'll give a little bit of background. Initially, I was sitting down with a guy I'll call by Remarkable Rob. He's one of the guys on the show, and you'll pretty much guess Remarkable means he's the BlackBerry guy on the show. Before I ever even had a blog, I sat down with Rob, and Rob was telling me about his blogging, his experience with blogging, and how much he loved it. And so that turned me on to blogging. So pretty much that day, I was back in the office scouring through like for blog names, and Simple Mobile Review came up. And then I buzzed my buddy Chris and said, hey, I'm starting a blog. Are you interested? And he was like, I'm totally in. Mm-hmm. Chris is on the blog, Chris Ashley. He's actually my hardcore Windows Phone or Windows Mobile guy. So we were trying to start a blog.
A RIM guy and a mobile and a Windows Phone 7 guy?
Yeah, it gets better. Don't worry. So the goal behind the blog was really to start off by answering friends' questions because, you know, you've become the tech friend for everybody. So you're constantly answering the same question over and over. So we wanted a form that we could just start answering questions and just forward friends over to say, if you want to know which phone to check out, just read this article. If you want to know about that phone, read this article. If you want to know about this app, read that article. So we started it off that way. So there's a blog and then there's also the podcast. So on the podcast, you have myself, and I consider myself a free agent. And the reason why I say I spend $1,000 a year, I would probably say I go through about 4 phones a year. Jeez. And it's not that I break them. It's just that I get bored. So right now, my flavor of the month is Windows Phone, which is in part why I'm on the show today to kind of tell a little bit more about Windows Phone. But also, I was running iOS earlier this year when they released on Verizon. I've had a BlackBerry this year, and I've run Android this year, both the Thunderbolt and the Charger. So I'm constantly rotating through hardware. So I'm the free agent where it depends upon the day of the week, which, you know, topic I really like, am passionate about. Chris, he's squarely in the Microsoft camp, and he was actually the one who got Brandon Watson on our show, which is, you know, a phenomenal grab. As well as Brandon's a listener of the show, and he really contacted us and said, hey, I want to be on the show, which was pretty awesome.
Explain to them who Brandon is, because that was the first episode I listened to. It was wonderful.
Yeah, I mean, we were all kind of like shocked that, like, you know, a guy of his caliber at Microsoft would be willing to come on our show and talk. So Brandon, if you look at Windows Phone, there's at the top, there's Joe Belfiore. I think I'm saying his last name correctly. Uh-huh. And he really runs Windows Phone at Microsoft. And then Brandon Watson, he essentially focuses on developer relationships with them, but he's right below. I mean, he's the guy right below Joe for Windows Phone.
Wow.
And so recently when HP decided to cancel WebOS, Brandon sent out that tweet saying, if you want some phone love, come over to Windows Phone. Come to Windows Microsoft. We'll give you phones. We'll give you dev tools. We'll give you.
Any developers, WebOS developers who wanted to come over and do Windows Phone 7.
Yeah, and he's truly the face of Windows Phone, and that's when he got inundated with like almost 1,000 WebOS developers really fast, saying, "Hey, you know, we're looking for a place to develop." So. That's Brandon. He was on one of our shows. So for Chris, that was like, you know, couldn't be any better, right? Yeah, he's talking to his God. Exactly right. Now, on the other side, we have another guy who joins the show periodically. He's not on there all the time, and his name is Brent Harmon. He is our Android guy. Like, he used to be a Windows Mobile guy. He ran with the BlackBerry Storm, but that pretty much turned him away from BlackBerry, and now he's squarely in the camp of Android.
The Storm is enough to turn anybody into, you know, just wanting to use a stick in sand instead of using a device.
Oddly enough, I listened to your show where you talked about where you got the Storm and you could not stand the SurePress where you had to press the screen in. It was, oddly enough, I hated it at first, but I really got used to it. But the problem I ran into is that the screen kept deadening. So I'd have areas of the screen that I couldn't press.
I couldn't use the letter Q on mine. Now, it doesn't come up all that often, but every once in a while you might need it. You know?
Yeah. No,
that,
exactly
that was
right.
The most hideous device I've ever used. By just a strong margin. I don't expect anything will ever be as bad as that.
Yeah. So, I mean, that's really where we came from. And mind you, like, across the team of guys that, like, actually are just passionate about this stuff, I mean, even, like, with Chris, he spends, you know, he usually goes through 4 or 5 phones a year as well. So all the guys are actually spending a lot of their own personal hard-earned money on just because, wait, there's a new phone with a camera, or there's a new phone that has 8 megapixels versus 5, and that's kind of how it evolved.
It's like a sickness, isn't it?
It is an absolute disease, unfortunately.
It's so fun, but it's such an expensive hobby. Well, I think one of the reasons I wanted to get you on the show was because that particular episode was an eye-opener to me because I don't live anywhere near the Windows Mobile world, so I don't hear anybody excited about the product. And that guy was just so passionate and excited. And, you know, in my world, we just like to sit around and mock Microsoft and pretend that they don't exist and that they don't matter anymore. And that's you're simply not true. And so at the risk of stopping being inbred on the show, and again, I named my show purposely vague so I could talk about anything I wanted to. Nobody can say, oh, wait a minute, this is supposed to be a Mac show, because technically it doesn't say that in the title. So I wanted to hear about Windows Phone 7. What is it? What's it about? What's cool about it? What's dumb about it? You know, from somebody who actually knows it. And like you being agnostic is kind of fun.
So I started with Windows Phone 7, I guess, honestly, it was 2 days after it released. And I grabbed the phone on AT&T because that's where it was at. And let me be clear, I am a Verizon customer, but I wanted to play around with the technology to see what did they do right, what did they do wrong, and kind of where was it at. So I think that was like around November 4th or 5th, to be an exact date. Mm-hmm. With that said, I used it for a little while, but then it was a secondary device for me, and I wasn't giving it enough time. So I jumped away. They came to Verizon, and I finally bought it in July of this year, right when they released Mango, the Mango developer build became available. So when I grabbed the phone, I updated to Mango, and I really never saw the original version again, and I've been running Mango since then. So I've updated once on the developer build.
And Mango is the most recent version, right?
Well, it's the most recent version it's not out. GA yet. It's about to release. So there's a whole bunch of devices. Like I think HTC is releasing new devices. Samsung's coming. I mean, Nokia is coming with new devices. There's a lot of new devices for Windows Phone Mango that's coming this fall.
Okay, so Mango is not out yet.
No, that is the next generation that release that is RTM. It's RTM'd, but it hasn't started shipping on device. Released to manufacturer, okay. But it hasn't started coming on devices yet.
Okay, so you're cheating. You've been living in the future.
Right. So like just like with iOS, if you're a developer, you can grab, you know, iOS 5 now and run it on devices. But with the Apple NDA, you can't talk about it. With Windows Phone, fortunately, the NDA doesn't hold us tight lips, so we're able to talk really freely about Windows Phone because Microsoft is out there really being vocal about Windows Phone and everything going on there.
Very cool. Very cool. So what do you like about the Windows Phone experience? I mean, what's it like?
So I think, you know, no matter what phone you're on, they're all really similar. And there's these idiosyncrasy things that are better about each phone. So I'll try to stick to doing a compare contrast between like Android, iOS, because I think that's where it's at. I'll chime in BlackBerry whenever necessary, but I don't think anybody cares.
Except for the mocking and stuff.
Yeah, Rob doesn't like to hear that whenever Rob's pretty hard on BlackBerry these days. Okay. But so the real difference, and I think when you start looking at a Windows Phone and you say, well, what's the difference? It really does start at the user interface of the user experience. They went with a tile concept versus icons like iOS or widgets and slash icons like you get on Android.
So the tiles are just big square blocks, right, that all touch each other instead of having space between them?
They butt up very close to each other, but they're called live tiles because they're supposed to be this this hub of interaction for you. So a live tile, like for example on Mango, there's a Me tile, and if I go down to my Me tile, it'll tell me you have 3 notifications or you've been tagged in a photo, so I know what's going on Facebook and Twitter as it relates to me. Or I could have, for example, a group tile, which would be bloggers. So I might have like 10 or 15 people that I follow on Twitter, Facebook, that are core bloggers. So I can go look at the blogger tile and I can see everything that's going on in that blogger group that I have.
So it's actually typed in little tiny text on the tile?
The text on the tile will update. And mind you won't see every single post like where it's almost impossible to read, but you'll see like the most recent things, like 3 new items to read. And I can tap on that and I can be very focused on just those people and those items versus being back into the raw feed of everything.
Right, where you get distracted and lose track of time.
Exactly. And then like the first experience really starts where you start going into this tile interface. And I like to look at the tiles as being a hybrid between an icon, which is what you get on iOS, as well as widgets, which you get on Android. It's like kind of that halfway mark in between the two things. And it's really just like a new version of icons.
Okay.
So the one thing I loved, and I remember when I first left iOS to go to Android, I hated the fact that with iOS, oddly enough, I really, really liked the weather app. sounds really strange.
Most I don't people, know what it is about weather. I live in California where the weather never changes, and we love weather too.
Yeah,
it's like
guys.
Every day, all it ever says is early morning low clouds followed by hazy afternoon sunshine, and yet we have live Doppler 7000 HD to hear that.
Nice. I mean, I love the weather in Southern California. I really do. Gosh, that is the one place that I could say we could move anytime. But the cool thing about the weather app on iOS is that I didn't have to go into it. I would see a sun shining, and I knew that it was sunshiny. I didn't have to click to find that out. Now, if I wanted a several-hour forecast, I did. Or what's the other app that had the same updating? The calendar app. Every once in a while, you just want to know what today's date is. And the calendar app actually does flip the date. Like, when you initially see it, you just think, oh, that's cute. They put a calendar with a date on it. But the date actually changes coordinating with the day you're on. And it's a very subtlety of Apple that you get that's really elegant. And with Windows Phone, you get a similar elegance that's kind of built into the platform with these tiles. Like, one of my favorite tiles is the picture tile or the picture hub. So let me step back for a moment and explain the concepts, because the tiles are just a way of displaying information, and then you get into this concept of hubs.
Okay, hang on a second. I have to back you up. I think this is really funny. So the iOS has a little calendar icon too. I never noticed it had today's date on it. I always click on it to find out what the date is.
Yeah,
nice tip.
It's a small subtlety, but it's like I say, most people would just, you'd go and you'd run and you'd never really realize that. And for me, it was one of my favorite things, because I'm on my home screen. I could just look at, oh yeah, it's the 12th. And no one, like, everyone thought I was stupid that I thought that was such a cool thing. I was like, it's that level of polish you get in iOS that Android just, they don't get it. And that's the problem. Google's not a software company like Apple or Microsoft.
It's not as bad, though, as like the, I mean, I love open source more than the next guy, but it's just so clunky. It's not that bad, is it?
Android?
Yeah.
No, it's not really bad. It's just there's this constant lack of polish. Like, if you've ever played with the Motorola Zoom, a great tablet, but they have this concept of like this beveled wall that's swiveling. And with Apple, you would actually slide that wall and you'd kind of almost see the frame would slide. The text would be slightly morphed as it's creasing across the edge. You would get that kind of experience. With Android, you get this kind of faux like dotted line that's kind of like as the wall is spinning. And it's just like, well, you should have just slid the panels like Microsoft did with the Metro UI and remove the idea of trying to make it look like it's banqueting around the corner, because it actually looks kind of...
Because they're not doing it well. Don't do it, right?
Exactly. It's not that... it's a great OS. It's just... And this isn't an open source, closed source thing. It's just a level of polish you get from a company that's been doing software development for 20 plus years.
I also think that it's whether you care about that sort of thing. Like, when you plug an iPod into a Mac, I don't know how it works on the PC. I suspect it does the same thing. If it's a red iPod, it shows up as a red iPod in iTunes. They didn't need to do that. That's not because they had to. It's just because it's just that extra polish, like what you're talking about.
Yeah, I usually equate it to, like, when you're playing around in an app, a developer could just throw you a list of your friends' names and say, pick the one you want to call, or they can put pictures next to the friends' names. And it's that little element that just makes the hugest difference in an application development.
Yeah, it's kind of funny that really matters, but it does.
For the average user, it's huge, and for the person who's actually writing or paying attention to it very closely, it shows an attention to detail that is unparalleled anywhere else.
So Windows Phone 7 does have that kind of polish?
Yes, and I think there's a lot of misnomers, and I think when we are on that show that you listened to, the one thing we asked Brandon was, how does Microsoft get past that most people who use Windows Phone, they actually do like it? You probably saw that from Scott Adams. He had really high regards. There was an article just today on ZDNet where the article, I think, talked about Windows Phone being the most stable phone platform.
Oh, I haven't read that yet. I saw you put a link in the show notes to it.
Yeah, so it's a good article, but it talks about truly his experience with it. But Microsoft and Windows Phone, it really does. They do bring that level of polish to it.
Cool.
So
okay.
So before I start talking about hubs, let me explain what they are. Microsoft has a very rigid definition of hubs, but hubs in Windows Phone were designed to kind of be this place that it actually brought in information from multiple sources. So just imagine bringing together information, regardless of whether it's on the web, whether it's in an application, whether it doesn't really matter where it's coming from, and then you can kind of see that from a single panel view. So the simplest way to think of it is you've talked many times about using, I think it's Atium, your chat client.
Right.
Look at that as being a hub. It's your way that you chat. You don't care if you're chatting on Google Talk, on AOL, on MSN, on Skype. You just know that you're chatting and it should just work.
It does confuse other people, though, because they'll say, what are you on? And I'll say, I don't know. How are you talking to me? How'd you find me? Facebook. Okay, then I'm on Facebook.
Yeah. Now I will say, I'll tell you a funny story about I'll finish on hubs, and then I'm going to tell you a very funny story about this concept. So it really does unify your experience from getting data from multiple sources. So when I went to Mango, I installed it, and I was really excited because there's a messaging area in Mango that essentially takes Facebook chat and unifies it in here. So I can use Facebook chat or Windows Live Messenger, and I can chat with people, or I can just text message. So I configured it, and I get a message from a friend, and we go through this long thread. And I was like, how am I communicating with this person? Because I didn't really think about it. I just was talking. And I look, and the area you type in, they just show Facebook, so that you know that you're chatting on Facebook. And there's this moment of pause, knowing how Facebook feels about your information being public, where I was thinking, what did I just say in this thread? Is this on my wall in Facebook? So, of course, it's a mad dash to my computer to pull up my Facebook wall. I don't see it anywhere. And as I start just caroling through, the entire conversation is actually in Facebook messages. So it is private between just me and that person. But that's what the hub experience does, is it really does blur the lines. Like I thought I was text messaging, and because they just hit me up, they hit me on a message and said, can you chat for a second? I was like, sure. And then we just kept going back and forth. And I wasn't aware, because I don't use Facebook chat. It was just, it's just built and integrated in the phone versus going to an app.
So and that's the it is good to keep an eye on where those things are, though. You're right.
it's definitely nice to know how it functions. So there's a trust that you turn over to any phone manufacturer that they're doing their job right. But it's a brilliant experience when you're interacting in that hub area. So another example of the beauty of hubs is like in the picture hub. So I take a picture, and just like with iOS now, you can have that upload. I can have it upload to SkyDrive or through the Apple Cloud on an iOS device. But the idea is that when I'm in that hub, I can look at pictures that are either stored natively on my device or that my friends have stored in Facebook or SkyDrive.
Oh, and so, it's all pulled together.
Exactly. Oh, so I can jump into the picture hub, scroll to any of my contacts, and I can look at information about my contacts, like what's new, what have they posted recently on the social network of choice. LinkedIn might be the location. And I can slide the panel across and look and say, oh, look at all their new pictures. And I can, go through different pictures and things that they posted up. And
So the hub is a single tile that says pictures. But then from there, when you go into it, then you start to see the separation of where that came from, or...
The separation of where it came from is really blurred. It's more that you have a single thing that you can tap on called pictures, and it's just, here are your pictures. And then you can say, I want to see pictures for Chris Ashley. And I can type in Chris's name, get him as a contact, pull him up, and then I can see, what he's recently posted because of the integrated experience of Facebook and Twitter. Or I can see pictures that he's posted on SkyDrive or on Facebook or on Twitter because of an integrated experience. Actually, I shouldn't say Twitter. Twitter's not there. But that kind of gives you just a general idea of that, if that makes sense.
Yeah, it does.
So, and that's probably one of the biggest value adds when you're looking at it, is that I don't care where Chris posted the picture. What I care is that I can see the picture of his daughter, playing with, his Windows phone, or I can see her riding a train on her second birthday or something like that, versus trying to figure out where people are posting things. And the nice thing about having all this stuff integrated into the phone is if you choose, and mind you, this is as you look at Windows Phone evolving or any platform evolving, if you choose to post your pictures on, I think Bart talks about posting on
Flickr,
thank you. Right. So if you post on Flickr or Picasa or any of these online sources, eventually all that should fold back into your picture hub. So I should just be able to tap on a person and I should have a tile that shows pictures from Facebook. And I can actually see that those are sourced from Facebook or sourced from SkyDrive, or potentially in the future source from something like Picasa or Flickr or Photobucket or SmugMug. That should just be a unifying experience versus having to jump through 10 different apps to see and share pictures with people.
And I think you finally explained to me what they've tried to do in their ads and explain is that when you want to goof around on your phone, you're not thinking, I want to goof around on Flickr. I want to goof around on Facebook photos. You're thinking photos. I just want to look at some pictures here because I'm standing in line at the DMV. And so you're getting a sense of what your friends are uploading and yet not have to be thinking about what technology they use to do it.
Exactly. And from a Microsoft standpoint, that's called information at a glance. I think you said it better.
you used a few more words. I got to be honest.
Unfortunately. But I mean, that's one of the value adds is that you don't, the good thing about a platform is that you don't, with Windows Phone, you realize the value of it once you've plugged your information in and you start using it. But unfortunately for a purchasing user, that's a long way down the sales cycle for me to say I see value in this. Whereas I walk in and with iOS, there's an inherent, you can't go wrong buying an Apple phone, right? An iPhone. Or with Android, it's like, man, it looks like those widgets look really cool on the interface. So it's kind of hard to go wrong with buying the thing that looks good. And then there's just the pure coolness factor that's built into Android or iOS. With Windows Phone, it's something that Microsoft is really establishing themselves around.
Well, I think this is something you guys talked about on one of the other shows, was that if you go into the store and you pick up a Windows Phone 7 phone, I've got to mock it, can't help myself. If you go pick it up, it doesn't have that attraction because it's not your photos under photos. So you don't see that instant gratification that you're talking about that really has such meaning.
Yeah, I mean, like I say, when I draw value on the phone, it's because it's my information in here. And I usually can say, hey, why don't you take a look at it? But for someone who's close to me, a friend, it's meaningful for them because they probably know a lot of people I know.
Sure.
So that, oh, wow, I didn't really realize that. But, you know, Microsoft is eventually going to be going to this concept, or at least they better be, to like a demo mode phone where you could plug your, like, in theory, let's say you plug your information in there and then you could see it. And then you can wipe it before you leave or something. Like, that needs to be the case because, you know, Brandon sending these phones out to Molly Wood or to Scott Adams from Dilbert and having them evaluate a phone is great, but not everybody is going to be able to have them send them a phone to do an evaluation of. They have to make a purchase decision.
You know, I do always laugh, though, when I go to Best Buy and they've got a tablet out there. I love to go play with those tablets because invariably I'm somebody else in Facebook. And you just want to go mess with them. What I usually do is write a message on their own wall and then log them out. Just go, hey, moron. So don't do that if you do find a phone you can put your stuff into, right? Or do it and then log out.
Yeah, I don't know how they're going to accomplish this, giving this person this customized experience, but they need to figure out a way to bridge that last gap so the person wants to take that phone home with them versus, you know, walking out of the store with yet another device that's not a Microsoft device.
Yeah.
So now
you had in the show notes something about the Metro UI. What is that all about?
So Microsoft came up with a new UI design concept. And if you look at when iOS first shipped, I mean, it was groundbreaking. I mean, no one can argue that. What they did is they made larger buttons, very touch-friendly, but it still does have, if you think about it, a legacy PC feel to it that you click a button and it slides to a different window. Mm-hmm. Now, mind you, it's way more elegant than a PC ever has been, but it still has this kind of legacy tire heritage of a PC. With the Metro UI, they went with this concept of panels. So if you imagine that you go into an app, and in iOS, if like you go into your settings area, you kind of need to tap on something to get somewhere else. And then sometimes there's a button at the top right-hand corner where you tap to go to the next menu over to the side. Mm-hmm. Windows Phone, you would just grab the panel, the entire page, and slide it to the right or to the left. And you can kind of slide your way through. And eventually you wrap all the way around in a circle. So if you imagine that you had five panels, when you make your sixth slide either left or right, you would actually be back at the first panel you started with.
Do you get lost?
No, not at all. It's quite easy to kind of navigate because you kind of have these you have big words at the kind of the top of the panel that says, oh, you're looking at, you know, call history right now. Oh, you're looking at what's new. Oh, you're looking at contact information. Okay. It's not hard. Three slides and I'm all the way through that.
Okay.
So the Metro UI makes it, you're just sliding windows and panels. So apps like, for example, Bank of America, probably the best Bank of America app ever written is written on Windows Phone. It's gorgeous to navigate through. I'm a Bank of America customer, so that's why I care. It's easy to navigate
through. So you're happy with Warren Buffett today?
What did Warren do? Did he buy a whole bunch of Bank of America?
He bought like $5 gazillion worth of Bank of America stock. He injected massive amounts of money into Bank of America.
I could have only known yesterday. That would have been a nice thing to buy on.
Let's see. With $357 million in paper profits. $5
billion.
Wow. It must be fun to be him.
Yeah, just to be able to shell that kind of money around is amazing.
Yeah.
So, I mean, and I've had friends who actually try to navigate through phone, like iOS, and they struggle with that whole idea of the back button and stuff like that of trying to, you know, where am I at, where am I trying to get to, and how to get back.
It's also not consistent. Every developer does it a little bit differently. So I do find some where it's like, oh, it was in the upper right, not the upper left, or a lot of times like bottom left. Who looks bottom left, you know?
That is precisely right. So that's one of the benefits of like the feel of the Metro UI. I mean, and that honestly is like the foundation of the polish you get on Windows Phone. But then there's other things, like if you go beyond the concept of live tiles, you'll get into, you know, things like brain freeze right now. When you're on the home screen, the lock screen, mm-hmm. like easy access to the camera. That's a feature that, you know, Microsoft really touted, right? When they first released Windows Phone, is that you just press the camera button from your home lock screen and take a picture.
And that is my single favorite thing I'm looking forward to in iOS 5. And I don't care if they did steal it from somebody. Jeez.
Yeah. It's a great feature coming to iOS. But oddly enough, you know what? That's not my favorite feature. My favorite feature is reminders.
Oh.
Here I am diverting back to iOS. The thing I love, the concept I love about reminders, and I don't know yet because I haven't played around with the iOS 5 beta, is if I could set a reminder on one iOS device and send it to another so that my wife could say, I need you to get milk when you leave Chris's house, like because I'm over at his house right now recording, and it could land on, say, my iOS device. I could see that when I walk out the door and get in the car and start driving, it says, get milk on the way home. Versus, because I'm usually not, sometimes I am the person setting it, but sometimes someone wants to set it for me. And if you could create one and then forward it in an email where it just automatically adds to my reminders, that would be like the best.
Does she know actually exist or you're dreaming it and teasing us?
Well, I know that Reminders currently has this location sensitive thing to it. So that in iOS with Reminders, when it releases in iOS 5, you could actually say when I'm driving or when I leave the gym, go to the grocery store and get bread. So you can put a reminder that when I leave this physical location to do that. That's what I think Steve showed that on stage.
Oh, okay.
So my hope was that my wife could say, when you leave Chris's house, go get milk on her iPhone.
Oh, that's right. But it knows it's not sending it to you at 5:15 because she thought you'd leave at 5. It's sending it to you when you change locations.
Right.
Yeah. So that's awesome because you're late coming home from work, I bet.
Always. Always. So, I mean, but I think that would be like a really cool feature that you not only could you do that, but someone else can do it on your behalf, send it to you in an email, and it just adds to your reminders with the location-sensitive information, like on your way home, when you're driving, or whatever the condition might be at, you know, 5:30. And that's the kind of cool thing. I think the example they gave is that when you leave Moscone Center, do this.
right.
But, you know, it would those
turn
are the types
3G
of things
back
I,
on. Oh, wait.
Yeah, no kidding. With Android, you're always turning it off, unfortunately, to save your battery life.
Yeah, and what's up with that? I know that's completely off topic, but I've talked to one person out of like 40 who have Android, and they'll go, "Oh, it's really cool. I really love it." I said, "Oh, that's awesome. How's your battery life?" "Oh, it sucks."
Yeah,
one person didn't say that.
Now, mind you, I've learned how to work with the battery in Android, but I wrote an article on SMR, and I will find it for you, or Simple Mobile Review, let me be more clear. I'll find it, and I'll send it to you so you can add it to the show notes. But it talked about an app that was designed to automate a lot of these things. So what would happen is – now, mind you, I work from home, so I joke when I say I'm always late coming home. But the cool thing about this app that it would do on Android and gosh, I wish I could remember the name of it. It would allow you to do things such as when I'm at work, which is a physical cell tower location, turn off Wi-Fi or turn on Wi-Fi. When I'm in the car driving, when I'm driving, which it would just sense that you're moving because the GPS is constantly saying you're at different locations. turn off Wi-Fi, because obviously I'm not near a Wi-Fi location, dim the screen when I'm doing this. So I would have a mode that I would just tap on the screen of my phone when I got on an airplane, and it would know, turn this off, turn that off, lower the brightness, and it would say battery life. If I was in a meeting, I would do similar – I had similar routines. So there's a lot of stuff that was automated to help for battery management, but whether
you shouldn't have to is part of it, right?
Yeah, that is 100% right. You shouldn't have to go this effort. I will say 4G has made it significantly more complex.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Now, how is Windows Phone 7 battery life?
Fantastic, actually. For me, now, I will always say that I don't care what the phone is. It can be a BlackBerry, a Android phone, a Windows phone, doesn't matter. I can kill a battery in about 4 to 4.5 hours. And a lot of it
Why?
Is I subscribe to about 14 different podcasts.
Oh.
Invariably, if I'm like, let's say, not on Wi-Fi and I'm out like actually at customer meetings or something and I'm downloading podcasts in the background, it just chews through my battery. And I don't realize it because I say check twice a day. For this podcast, check once a day.
You can check once a week for mine.
Yeah, yours is once a week, but something like BOL or TNT, Tech News Today, those, you know, you're getting on an every day, or, you know, you got Callie Lewis and her shows. And I mean, it's just, the list goes on of all the shows you subscribe to. So that's in part why I'm a very heavy, heavy battery user. But traditionally, if I'm at home and I'm not hammering my phone, and when I say hammering, like, I mean, draining it in 4 hours, I can get a good 6 to 8 hours out of my battery life, which is adequate. And that's probably similar to what I was getting on iOS.
That's funny. I charge mine when I go to bed at night, and there's about 35% left every day.
Oh, I would dream of that.
But I actually don't listen to, I think one of the tricks is I listen to podcasts using my iPod Nano, and I do that in the car, and when it's in the car, it's plugged into the charger, so.
See, like, I do things such as, like, on Windows Phone, there's an option that I can say, as soon as I take a picture, upload it to SkyDrive.
Oh.
And I turned that on because one time, and this was when I wasn't using Windows Phone, I was on my iOS phone, I was taking pictures willy-nilly, and the phone started acting funny, you know, 3-4 days later, and I decided, you know, I'm just going to reset this and I'll, you know, start all over again. And I did that, not thinking about my pictures that were on the phone. I just did the reset and set my phone up. And I lost all the pictures. And I was like, you know, it's easier. I can just turn on automatic upload to SkyDrive. So it was funny. When I reset my phone recently, when I got Mango, I'm like looking at all these pictures on the phone. I'm like, what the heck are these things doing here? And then it dawned on me, A, these are on SkyDrive. And B, it was that transparency between SkyDrive and my phone. I thought the pictures were on my phone. And no, they were just a product of what was on SkyDrive.
Oh,
so
that's really interesting.
Yeah. Running those really cool experiences.
Yeah. But what else do you want to tell us here?
So I don't want to take too much time on you, but there's other little things that Microsoft has done. Like with iOS, when you go in, like, let's say your contact list, for example, you can quickly scroll through your contact list, or you can use that little alphabetic slider that's almost impossible to ever hit the right letter.
I never use that. I just type the person's name at the top every time.
So there's a search built in for Windows Phone as well, but there's also this where you can, like, between every alphabetic letter, you can just tap like A. And then if you tap like the A or B, it'll cover your screen with all the letters of the alphabet, or all letters or symbols that you've used to define a person in your contact list. And you can just click on N and see all the people whose names, like Nicole, that starts with an N, would be an example of that. So again, it's just one of those quick ways that you kind of navigate yourself through like the Windows Phone. There's another really cool feature that I mean, I'm absolutely in love with. So, if you're ever on vacation, like you just recently were, you frequently find yourself, where do you want to eat tonight? And the question is, I don't know. So you start off by looking at these places, and you start calling around to find out, like, is there any availability for reservations? You call like 4 or 5 places. Now, what happens in your phone, because you've even looked those phone numbers up on, like, let's say, I would integratively look that up on Bing. And I'd see all these phone numbers. So I would call, let's say, the first restaurant, for example, and I would – you find out it's 2-hour wait. Then I call the next one. It's a 45-minute wait, 30-minute wait, 3-hour wait. But we know we want to go to one of them. It's like, well, call back restaurant ABC. Call this one restaurant back. But when I look at my phone, it's just a bunch of phone numbers.
Right, right, right.
The cool thing on Windows Phone is it actually shows the name of the restaurant you called, because I did a Bing search found the restaurant, and it's like the name of the restaurant's now tied into the call history versus the phone number I dialed. So it unifies that experience.
So you went into Bing, you looked up, in your example, you say Taboo Grill, you type in Taboo Grill into Bing, it shows you the contact information in Bing, you hit it right from there and it dials the phone, and that's how it knows?
That's exactly right.
Oh,
it,
okay.
It takes that information that it was Taboo Grill and pushes that over to my call history. So I know that the last place I called was like at 1 o'clock that we made reservations. What was it called again? Oh, it's Taboo Grill. Because I've called 10 places now, right? So I know now where I called. The other thing is like if you are using your phone like to connect to your Microsoft Exchange server and you do a GAL lookup, a global address lookup for somebody, it doesn't just take the phone number for that person, but it takes that person's name out of that contact list and shoves it down onto the phone. So you now know I called Bill Murray at that time versus called just someone.
You know Bill Murray?
I wish. Be playing golf with him or something, hopefully.
Wouldn't be talking to me.
No, I actually, believe me, I've been looking forward to this for 2 weeks. I was like, I wish he wasn't on vacation this week.
Well, that's cool. Yeah, I definitely have been. Well, let's see. So we probably should start winding up, but is there any other big things you wanted to talk about? Are there other hubs that really blow you away, or where do you see the future of this going? What are you thinking?
Oh,
and you still owe us a funny story.
I can give you actually a really good one. When I think about Windows Phone, I see where this is going. Microsoft has already announced, or I don't know if they meant to announce, but at TechEd in New Zealand, they announced that Skype would be coming to the messaging area on Windows Phone.
Hmm.
So I talked to you earlier that you have Windows Live Messenger in there and you have Facebook Chat in there, but imagine Skype coming in there. And when you think about, you know, the thing that makes BlackBerry unique is this end-to-end encryption and the BBM network. All of a sudden, you have everybody who's on Skype can chat with anybody who's on Windows Phone, secure endpoint to endpoint, which is equivalent to BBM, except it's not device-centric. You can be on your PC, you can be on your Mac, you can be on your Linux box, you know, you can be on your tablet, you can be on your Windows Phone, your Android phone, it doesn't matter. And you can have endpoint to endpoint encrypted conversation. So it really does, you know, solidify Windows up there with a BBM. Is that my phone?
No, sorry, that's me.
Okay. It's you can really solidify yourself up there. So, you know, you got also, you know, you figure that Facebook recently added their Skype chatting.
I want to back you up there, though. Why are you making the leap that Skype would be endpoint to endpoint encrypted? Skype is a peer-to-peer network technology.
Yeah, but
it's not secure at all.
Oh no, it really is secure. When you communicate on Skype, that's the one reason why people like to use Skype communication is that it is an encrypted. I'll double check, but it's the value out of Skype was that it was encrypted communication, so people knew that they can chat and there was the middleman or I think they call it super nodes in Skype. No one was in the middle encrypting what you were actually saying. I believe Steve Gibson did a show where he's talking about the whole Skype encryption thing where. No one was able to sniff that, but I'll double check that.
I must be misinformed. I'll have to go find that. If you find that Steve Gibson thing too, not that I wouldn't take your word for it, but there's certain authorities, right?
there's definitely certain people out there, but I know that Skype uses AES encryption to encrypt there. I'm looking at the Wikipedia page right now. If you just type in, go to Wikipedia and look for Skype security. There's a thing that talks about the 256-bit AES encryption that they use. So I believe, if I'm correct, it is endpoint-to-endpoint encryption so that if even though I'm going through many nodes, the conversation we're having is actually an encrypted conversation. And I'm not sure, but I thought Skype used to, in the UI, actually have that kind of little padlock button at the bottom of the UI to let you know that you were on an encrypted conversation. Again, I will double-check this when we get off the call to be sure, but I'm 99% sure it's using a peer-to-peer key encryption and key agreements that actually happen.
Well, the good thing to know is that Bart is yelling at his iPhone right now. It's either Allison, you moron, or Rod, you're so misinformed. Who knows? It could go either way at this point. But it's good to know he's frustrated. So that's nice.
I will always defer to Bart as being the authority on this. But I'm pretty sure that it's that level of encryption they're providing endpoint
to
endpoint.
Cool. Oh, cool. I'd be happy to be misinformed on that. That's awesome. Well, we probably have gone on long enough. You still owed us a story, didn't you?
So I'll tell you a funny story, and this one actually involves Chris. He's probably going to kill me for telling the story. So, you know, like, and I told you the idea of that you can set up your phone on Windows Phone to, say, automatically upload content to SkyDrive.
Right.
So it didn't involve that. Sorry, I take that back. So he decided he was telling his wife she snores. And she's like, I don't snore. He's like, no, really, honey.
Well, this is going to end well for him.
Yeah. So one night he grabs his Windows phone and he takes a video of her snoring.
Oh, no.
Not thinking, he's configured his phone to automatically upload. Yeah.
Oh,
you see where this is going.
Not. Oh, well, my gosh. He's a dead man.
Yeah. He's thinking he's a dead man. And it, like, when she's like, he's like, she wakes up and she's like, he's like, see you snoring. He's like, she's looking at it and she's looking at the video. And then he grabs the phone for her. She goes, what's wrong? She goes, I think I still have the phone set to upload to SkyDrive. She's like, are you kidding me? So now, of course, everyone is going to just see a video of her sleeping there snoring, right?
Hopefully drooling, you know, the whole thing. Nice. Nice.
Luckily for him and for his marriage, he had actually turned the feature off at a later point in time. So he didn't actually have it uploading to SkyDrive. But it was when he was telling me the story in retrospect, I mean, I was in tears laughing because I could just see, you know, him uploading a video of her just sitting there snoring. Because for me, I would have gotten that like instantly, and I would have definitely saved and put it on Facebook for him
just in case, right? Make sure he's humiliated.
Yeah.
Oh, that's so funny. Yeah, this stuff does get dangerous. I mean, the worst one I ever did was I wrote an email to someone, this was at work, about another guy, and it was this scathing email about what a moron I thought this guy was, and it just, you know, ripped him up one side down the other, and I hit send. As I hit send, I realized he was on distribution.
Oh.
It's like, luckily in those days we didn't do things like screen lock, and I instantly called a buddy of mine who worked in the same area, and I had him run to the guy's machine and delete it before he got a chance to read it.
at least you weren't like jumping over and ripping the network cable out of the wall or something.
That would have been a good idea. But we've all made that mistake. It's good that you're there for your friend though, and ready to support him.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, Chris and I have, oddly enough, been friends since kindergarten. So
I'm not sure why he's still friends with you the way you treat him.
Yeah, I know. Believe me, he gets equally even with me. So,
all right.
I can't thank you enough for having me on your show.
Oh, this has been a blast. We should do this again. Especially since you go so many different directions in technology, it seems like you'd have something to talk about every time I need you.
Yeah, absolutely. Anytime you need me, you let me know, and I will. I'll make sure that I'm ready to come on and talk about it. And we would love to have you come over on the Simple Review podcast anytime, because you bring an Apple flair, which would be nice to have, and to calm some of these guys down over there.
I don't know. Are girls allowed on that show?
Absolutely. You know, we just haven't had an opportunity to get one that would come on. So, but the guys are, I mean, you've heard the show. It's more like a bunch of guys just getting around and talking tech for about an hour. But it's usually fun. I was going to talk to you maybe offline one time about, you know, how you do your live show and stuff like that. Cause I think you've done podcasting on podcasting, which was amazingly valuable for us to get our podcast going. But
oh, good.
I would love to see like that whole same thing for, you know, going to, you know, doing a live show and, you know, getting people in the chat room. I think that's a really cool element you have that we haven't graduated to yet.
Yeah. And then pretty soon I'll introduce you to my pusher, Mark Shepard, who will help you drain your bank account of whatever's left.
Well, you already did that. I mean, I'm talking on a Heil PR40 mic because of you, and I have a list of things that I bought. I bought the Snowball because of you. I bought Feeder because of you. I bought Wiretap Studio because of you. And I mean, the list goes on of all the apps. And I have Screen Steps, which I love.
Oh, sweet.
So,
sweet.
Yeah.
Oh,
you've spent a lot of my money. Don't worry.
All right, good. What goes around comes around then. All right. Why don't you plug the show? Tell people they can find you in the show.
So, yeah, the easiest way to find us is go to simplemobilereview.com. Just three simple words, just simplemobilereview.com. You'll find me over there. I'm Rod Simmons on Twitter, and you can find the Cast of Clowns. If you want to find someone like Remarkable Rob, he's rimmarkable.com. So it's just a play on words. But that's where we're at. That's where we blog, and that's where you can find us. Once you get there, just click on the podcast button. You can see all of our historical shows. We're in iTunes. We're on the Zune Marketplace, and you know, we try to have fun every week, and we welcome feedback and new listeners.
Excellent. All right. Well, I really appreciate being on the show. This was a blast.
Thank you very much.
Well, I really hope to trick Rod into coming back on the show sometime soon. We had such a great time. We had a total blast. We talked for another half hour after we stopped recording because we were having so much fun. If I hadn't had a hard stop, I think we might still be talking. He and his buddy Chris from the show asked me if I'd be on the Simple Mobile Review podcast sometime, and of course I said I'd love to. Can't wait to do that. I hope you'll check out his show, especially the one where the Microsoft guy Brandon Watson was on it. That was so much fun. I put a direct link to that episode in the show notes. Well, that's going to wind us up for this week. Many thanks to our sponsors for helping pay the bills, Screen Steps, and Smile. Don't forget to send in your dumb questions, comments, and suggestions by emailing me at allison@podfeet.com. Follow me on Twitter at twitter.com/podfeet and make some comments on iTunes, would you? That'd be great. If you want to join in the fun of the live show, head on over to podfeet.com/live on Sunday nights at 5 p.m. Pacific time. Thanks for listening and stay subscribed.